Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
KMOX at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
I like that theme song, but I wish there were some Blue Jay sounds in there a little bit besides those nice Twitter birds.
Why?
I like Blue Jays.
Oh.
Because they're tough.
They are. And they're big and they're loud.
Exactly.
Yes, but they're beautiful.
And they scare hawks and everything else.
They do. They're some of the bullies of the feeders for sure.
Exactly. But I have a question for you.
Yes.
See you're still working.
Yes.
But if you were thinking about summertime and a fruit in the summertime, what would you think it would be?
Summertime
fruit.
Watermelon is
exactly
as good as it gets.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I like cantaloupe.
No. I like cantaloupe more than watermelon myself. But here, watermelon is the chief of the world's luxuries, king by the grace of God over all the fruits of the earth. When one has tasted it, he knows what the angels eat. Now, that's a real quote.
Wow.
So who do you think made that quote?
Albert Einstein.
Close. Mark Twain.
Oh, I was close. They look alike, kind of. Wow.
Can you imagine that? Come up with something like
so
that?
So poetic about a watermelon.
Right, exactly.
You know what? He must have had it the way I like it, with tequila with it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Then you're going, oh, I love you, watermelon. Oh, I love you,
but
watermelon.
But anyway, later on today, I'm going to have some watermelon trivia that I'm going to share with the listeners.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
You have seedless watermelons.
Yes.
What happens when you eat the last one?
Well, that's it.
I know.
There's no seeds.
I know.
I don't know how they do that.
I don't either.
Hmm.
You'll have to do some research on that. You're the watermelon guy.
Anyway.
I left him speechless, Alex.
Yes. And here's one of the trivia things. Let's see, where is that? Well, I'll just wait. Contrary to popular belief, swallowing watermelon seeds is not harmful, and they do not increase the risk of developing appendicitis.
They don't?
No.
Did you ever hear,
you know, growing up of eating watermelon seeds would give you appendicitis? Really?
No.
Alex is
no.
saying yes.
Yeah, which happened. That's what I'm blaming this on. But no, I never heard that one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So we can go ahead and eat the seeds too?
Yeah.
Oh,
eat
good.
The seeds.
All right. Got a little chewy to it.
Great.
A little crunch.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yes, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. But right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, comments, concerns, or ideas. This is Saturday morning, and we have a discussion about your yards, your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, or that specialty garden space. What's wrong? How come some of the flowers don't, guess what, get pollinated and don't grow fruit? Like cucumbers. Anything that's in the cucumber family, they actually have two different flowers, male and female. So it's a female that gets pollinated and will actually grow the fruit. The male flower just drops off after it pollinates. So those are the kind of things we can discuss. How to improve your soil, whether you should be shearing or pruning anything at all. What are those bugs? And what is the storms? What kind of damage is happening? And hopefully the information we share you'll use to make good decisions, to orchestrate your yard to be as good as it possibly can. Because this is a tough region to be able to grow anything successfully, continuously. Wow, it's just amazing. So the final judgment is going to be yours. And by the way, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me to your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another important player is Alex. He's the one who produces, and he answers the phone. And so all he needs to know is your first name and where you're calling from, not what you're calling about. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I come to your home and do landscape consultations. If you'd like for me to come and do a walk and talk in your home, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. Homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Best to do the emails, but a lot of times people call and we just go, you know, sometimes back and forth, but it's not really all that tragic. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Speaking of walk and talks, this past Wednesday, I was at this great farm in O'Fallon, Illinois, the Keller Farm. It's been in the family for 160 years. Unbelievable. They're trying to transition into kind of a new mode, keeping a lot of the agricultural aspects together. But it was just really amazing. The whole family was there, the mother, the kids, some of the grandkids and things like that. It was just absolutely fantastic. So thanks to the folks at Keller Farm for having me out. It was great to see the turkeys and the chickens and the donkeys and all the other animals and everything else and just the historic barns and everything. So that was a great fun, a great walk and talk in Keller Farms in O'Fallon. And today's Good Gardening Stroll, well, Broadway and Clark, Cardinal Nation, Ballpark Village, Busch Stadium all come together. The sidewalk and the sidewalk in front of Busch Stadium, bricks naming donations or donators, and granite stones etched with highlights. Like one of the highlights was October 15th, 1964. Cards beat Yankees, Game 7 of the World Series, and Bob Gibson was named MVP of the World Series that year. Next, May 1966, Busch Memorials opens. So you keep going, and there's all kinds of other ones as well. Also, as you're walking along there, the oak leaf hydrangeas fill a lot of the planting spaces with great shade trees above. So it's really kind of just a nice setting. And also surrounding that is a short black wrought iron fence, which has the Cardinal logo as edgers as well. And outside gate 6, that's where this is, flowering crab apples with the small green fruits dangling, red coleus and chartreuse sweet potato vines, and blooming cannas fill those areas right outside the gate with yellow moneywort or yellow creeping jenny, depending upon. I like moneywort because wort is just the British word for plant, so yellow money plant because it looks like little coins stuck together. Yellow creeping jenny is just a little too creeping to me. But anyway, that's on both sides of Spruce Street. The Tums building across the street, well, that provides some shade this time of morning. So the morning breeze moves the foliage and flowers. Bright sunny sky. It is baseball season, and the Cardinals have started. So I thought I'd take a walk around that part of town. Anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. A little bit later, I'm going to talk about lightning and what it does for the environment. But right now, let's go to Crystal City and into Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Listen, I have a question about rose bushes. I have two rose bushes that this year just went out of sight. They're not the the ones that everybody gets, but I think they're Floribunda.
Okay.
And they need to be cut back. They are just out of sight. Can I do that now with this kind of heat?
Yeah, I mean, roses can be pruned pretty much, and they should be on a more or less frequent basis through the entire growing season. So that means, you know, in the heat of the summertime as well. So just make sure that, you know, where you're making your cuts and everything, that you don't cut them back too far because of recovery and everything else. But the Floribunda varieties, aren't they one of the varieties that only flush once? Or do they flush multiple times?
Right. No, they flush once, and I mean to tell you, they really flush.
Right. And so they're not repeat bloomers, so you can go ahead and prune them. Just don't cut them back too severe because you want to keep enough foliage so you can keep them healthy.
Perfect, as usual. Thank you, sir.
Certainly, my pleasure.
And bye-bye.
Anybody else, questions? 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We got some lines open. Let's go out to St. Charles into Doug's yard. Hi, Doug.
Yes, I have a question about volunteer strawberries that are starting to grow all over my yard.
Ooh.
They don't get big enough to eat.
Right.
Should I be worried about getting them out?
If you don't, they are going to create a giant mat of wild strawberries. They're tiny, and I'll tell you, I mean, I was, you know, I hand weed most of my yard for the most part. I use some herbicides, but for the most part, I hand weed. I found a wild strawberry. It was kind of underneath my zoysia lawn, and where the core was, the center, you know, I thought, okay, I got rid of that. And then I started looking, and then it had runners going out from the center of the mother plant 3 feet. So, I mean, these things create a huge mat. And so I pull the, you know, the stems, the vines or whatever. And it was just amazing how far out they went from where I found the big clump, the original clump.
These have grown underneath a spruce tree that I have. And it's hard to get a mower in there anyway. So I try to use them as a ground cover underneath there.
Certainly. I mean, you could certainly do that. I mean, they don't have any presence in the wintertime, but, yeah, I mean, little red lights on the ground, can't beat that.
Yeah, they're too small to pick and eat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't even know if they have any flavor, to be honest.
They do. I've tried them.
Oh, really?
They're so tiny. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Certainly, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a suggestion. I learned this younger part of my life, that the zoysia grass, if you can find these days a real, that's RCL type lawnmower, once you start cutting with a real mower, it seems like that zoysia grass really gets like a carpet rather than a rotary type or like usually.
If you can find one of these
real mowers, I'm sorry, if you can find one of these real type mowers, it really makes your zoysia grass look like a carpet.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Yeah, my zoysia, I have a battery-powered mower, and it is rotary. And my grass really does look pretty good. But real mowers, I used to have one, actually not even motorized, just the old push type. And I got too old to push it. Too late. Well, yeah, too late. Let's put it this way, too lazy to push it. Let's go over to Cheryl's yard, and she lives in O'Fallon. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Mike. I would like to find a small, I don't know if they're called garden roses, but a more low-growing rose for full sun.
Probably, you know, variety-wise, I would go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website, mobot.org, and see which varieties they would recommend. But there are some miniature ones, but you don't want the miniature one. You want kind of the full-size one, only that stays close to the ground, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and you can do that, and also you can go at the Missouri Botanical Garden website, the Rose Society. You can contact the members of the Rose Society and see which. And the reason why I'm saying that is because they're going to know which varieties of those low, let's say, carpet-type roses are going to do the best in this region.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure. Yeah, I kind of like the lower growing ones too. But speaking of roses, recently, actually, today I'm going to head out later on after the show out to Baldwin, but they've got a lot of knockout roses. Apparently, they have the rose rosette. So if you do have roses that get the rose rosette, you're going to see purple stems come up, small thorns all the way up the thing. And once it gets it, you can't get rid of it. You got to get rid of the roses. So hopefully you don't have that, and you won't have that with these carpet roses. Thanks,
all right,
Cheryl.
Thank you.
Sure. And now let's head over to Kathy's yard. Hi, Kathy.
you, Mike, I was curious, when's the best time to put down crabgrass preventer?
Before the crabgrass starts growing.
I get it.
So basically, it's hard to put a specific calendar date, but if what I do is the ground temperature that triggers the yellow forsythia to bloom, that is when the temperature is, you know, gets pretty much right or just prior to, you know, the germination of all the warm season weeds, which crabgrass is one of those. So,
okay, another question. Why is grass seed so expensive? It's expensive. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess because they can get the price. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I've never known anybody that had a grass seed farm, so I don't know, you know, what's involved in the whole process or anything else. But I agree, it is pretty expensive.
Okay, I was just curious. Well, thank you so much for your information.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, bye.
And folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Here's some watermelon thoughts. No, watermelon trivia. Watermelons is a member of the Cucurbitaceae plant family, which really includes things like cucumbers, squash, pumpkins, muskmelons. Members of this family are monoecious, meaning they bear separate male and female flowers on the same plant. So that's why you'll see one flower that doesn't do anything. It just drops off. That's the male. The edible part of the watermelon is known as peepo, P-E-P-O, which is ripened ovary fruit with watery flesh and a hard rind. From a usage standpoint, watermelon is consumed as a fruit, but still it is truly classified as a vegetable. So can you believe that? So again, watermelons are in the same family as cucumbers. And so that whole family group basically has two different kinds, male and female flowers. So one of them is going to pollinate, the other one isn't. Here's some more watermelon trivia. The first recorded watermelon harvest occurred in Egypt over 5,000 years ago. And here's another one. Because of the great water content of watermelon, early explorers used watermelons as canteens. Now, can you imagine carrying a watermelon around like a canteen? You got to be pretty tough. The first cookbook published in the United States in 1796 contains a recipe for pickled watermelon rinds. So there's still some more of them, but we'll take a break and come back after this and take some calls. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, it's folks. Time for a good old-fashioned food fight. And what better time than July to have our battle of the barbecue.
According to the Guinness World Records, the world's heaviest watermelon ever produced weighed 350 and one-half pounds, and it was grown in Tennessee. 350-pound watermelon? I mean, come on. Jiminy. I bet it tasted really weird. Anyway, enough of that. Dennis, how are you today?
Fine. How you doing?
Very good.
I have a tree at the end of my driveway, and the southern half of the tree is fine and healthy. The northern half of the tree, the foliage is smaller and more yellowy in color. What do you think's going on?
I think it's just exposure as much as anything.
So it's the sun?
Exactly. Sun is crucial. I mean, sun is what makes food for the trees. So in other words, nutrients and moisture
trees.
Come up, go to the leaves, and then the leaves produce, you know, food. And then, you know, they're going to produce much more food on the south side because of the exposure. Is there shade on the north side besides just the, you know, the fact it's on the north?
A little, but yeah. not that much, Mike.
But it's going to still make an impact, depending upon what kind of tree it is. But you can notice.
It's a hickory.
It's a hickory? So,
uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, nut trees, they want to be out in the, you know, fully open. So even the fact that, you know, the circumstance, how old is a tree just in general?
About 40 years.
Yeah, so that's another factor, too. So age of the tree, the exposure and everything else, that's what's causing, you know, this particular circumstance.
Okay.
So nothing you can do. I mean, if you want to, you can do some deep root feeding in the wintertime after the foliage falls where you auger holes and backfill those holes with compost. But that's not necessarily going to, it's going to make your soil better, but it's not necessarily going to change a 40-year-old tree.
Okay, thanks a bunch.
Yeah, sorry. And now let's go over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a tree that I planted about 6 years ago in my front yard, and it was, you know, small. It's about 15 foot tall now, and it has these little berries on it that look like blueberries, but they're smaller than that, you know, smaller than a blueberry. And I thought I bought a pear tree. It didn't have a name on it or anything. It was at the end of the season, so I got it cheap. But I just wonder what them berries are and if they're poisonous.
No, they're not poisonous, but a lot of the flowering pear trees, which were basically, used to be the Bradford pears, there's all kinds of, you know, them available, they do produce fruits. And so what you're seeing is just miniature pears, even though they're not, they don't look like pears or anything else. So that's what you're experiencing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what kind of tree I bought. I thought I bought a pear tree.
You did buy one. But it was a flowering pear tree because, I mean, to get a really fruiting pear tree, you'd have to know that you were getting that. But this is just a flowering pear tree. I'm assuming white flowers in the springtime, and then they got pollinated this year, and that's why you've got the fruits.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go to Ferguson and into Linda's yard. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Mike. I've got two questions. One is, when is a good time to transplant a peony right now?
The foliage is already starting to turn funky. I'm assuming it's getting powdery mildew and everything else. I wouldn't do it in the heat of the summer, but to wait until mid to late August, early September, I'd do it at that time.
Okay, and the other thing is I've got a fig tree, and I've had it for a while, or a fig bush, I guess, and I try to wrap it every winter, and it gets, you know, the roots get through. But first of all, do I need to do that? And the other thing is, do I need to trim off those limbs that are shooting out close to the ground?
You know, it's really a personal call as far as that goes. I'm assuming you're talking about, you know, the hardy fig outside, correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
So, I mean, you can wrap them if you want to. It's not necessarily to do, but, yeah, I mean, you can make it basically by getting a lot of the sucker growth off. You can maybe make the tree stronger. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever gotten any fruit off of it or not.
I have. When in the year that it was really hot all summer, I had a really good crop.
So maybe you're
then,
gonna, you'll have
other
a good
than
one.
That, I get a few, you know, I get a few. I have some on there now that are green.
Right.
But I thought, well, if I trimmed off those lower ones that are coming out, maybe it would shoot more to the production, would it?
Yeah, I mean, right, because sometimes the suckers coming off like that, you know, sort of like interrupt the flow of, let's say, nutrients and moisture
right
up to the where you want it to go.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I want to do, because I want to go do that and clean it up and then see if I get more figs off of it. But I've been able to keep it alive, so I figure it's doing okay. It's just I would like more figs off of it.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, in the hill neighborhood of the city, there's all kinds of figs growing in people's backyards. So
yeah, I feel like walking down and saying, hey, what do you do? Give me an idea. Because this wrapping, I said, well, the thing is, I try to figure if I wrap it, then it'll have a better start the next year. But a lot of times, even with all my wrapping, it gets like all the growth gets frozen down almost to the ground. And
right.
I've put straw, I've put leaves, I've wrapped it in frost blankets, I've wrapped it in burlap.
Yeah,
you know?
I would say just leave it alone.
Okay.
Personally.
And just start from scratch.
Exactly. Because nothing looks more weird than something wrapped up in the backyard.
Well, it looks like a big snowman.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
And let's head over to Pete's yard now. Hi, Pete.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. We have a problem in our yard. We just had a patio put in, and they sloped it away from the house, with the result that the grass in some places is higher than the patio. I had a landscaper come out, and he suggested we put sod down. I'm wondering if this is, I don't think this is a good time of year to do that. Do you or?
Well, if it's zoysia sod, you could certainly do it in the heat of the summertime. If it's fescue or bluegrass, no. Wait until September or so to do that. But what you can do is get the soil prepared and ready by adding organic matter to your soil, getting it all leveled, getting all the weeds under control before you would lay the sod down.
Uh-huh. Okay. So Thank you much.
Yeah, in the heat of the summertime, I know it's not fun to go out and work in the yard, but get it ready. So when you can get the sod, you can just bring it home, lay it down. Now, why did you're saying that some areas is the grass was taller than the patio?
Yeah.
The edge of the patio? Then how come you're adding more sod? I don't quite understand.
Well, I would want to dig out the areas right near the patio.
Mm-hmm.
Dig down and then put, I was thinking putting sod in, then the grass would be level with the edge of the patio.
Well, until the grass starts growing.
Well, I was thinking of using the sod so we wouldn't have to wait for the grass to grow.
Oh, so you're just saying it looks really weedy and straggly and everything else.
Yeah, and it's what is above the patio is basically all dirt right now.
Okay. Oh,
so it washes off.
Yeah, you better get something on it.
But not the only sod this time of year would be the zoysia.
Yeah, it's pretty darn hot. Bluegrasses and fescues don't like the heat of the summertime. And, you know, even if the sod farms, somebody called, I think it was last week, saying some of the sod farms aren't even, you know, doing any cutting of the fescues and bluegrasses. Now, I'm not saying that's universal or anything else, but that was just their comment related to some sod. And so consequently, cool season, lawn, / sod, fescues and bluegrasses, do not try to put them down in the heat of the summertime. You're going to be spinning your wheels and wasting money, and you're going to be very disappointed.
Somebody else suggested monkey grass right next to the patio.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would work this time of year? Or?
Well, anything that you put down in the heat of the summertime is going to have a difficult time. Now, the liriope, if you're going to actually have it as, creating a ground cover, you have to get a very specific variety of liriope, unless you just want an edger around it. If you want one that's going to spread out and become a ground cover, you have to get liriope spicata, S-P-I-C-A-T-A. That's the one that spreads out like rhizomes underneath the ground and creates a solid blanket of liriope. Uh-huh. The other one is liriope muscari. It only grows in a clump, and it doesn't really spread. The clump will get bigger, but it doesn't spread and create ground cover.
Okay, I think that would be the one we might try. Okay. What was the name of that again, please?
The clump growing one?
Yeah.
It's liriope, L-I-R-I-O-P-E, and then the species is muscari, M-U-S-C-A-R-I.
Wow. Okay.
So, and there's a variegated one of that, which has yellow streaks on the blades.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we'll try that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Certainly. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, let's go over to Mrs. Peterson's yard. Hi, Mrs. Peterson.
Yes, Mike. I have two questions. Thanks for taking my call. My neighbor has a yucca plant,
mm-hmm.
and she wanted to get rid of it, and she tried to pull it, and she can't get rid of the root. How do you get rid of the root?
Basically, the root goes very, very deep because they're so drought tolerant. So.
Okay.
If she dug out the thing, for the most part, at least got down, let's say a foot or so of the root out of the ground, if it comes back up, which is going to take a long time to actually happen, then I would say just apply an herbicide to it to kill it off that way.
Okay. And thank you. And my second question, on one of my garden books, they were telling me that clay pots against plastic pots. And the plastic pots were better because the clay pots were porous. And I always thought the clay pots were good because they're more expensive.
Well, it just depends upon what you're trying to grow in them. You know, there's nothing wrong with being porous. It's just it means you're going to have to water more often, especially during summertime heat and drought circumstances. That's the only disadvantage. I like how, you know, let's say clay pots, terracotta pots look. So a lot of times what I do is I plant the plant in a plastic pot and just set that pot down inside the terracotta pot.
Oh, good. Yeah, good idea. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
To you. I've been listening to you for years, and thanks for your help.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show for years. Let's head now to South County into Phil's yard. Hi, Phil.
Michael?
Hi.
Two questions. Getting an influx of water grass for some reason. It's heavy rains ahead. And the second one, we had a very large mimosa tree taken out. And how close to that stump can I put a flowering dogwood?
I probably wouldn't get any closer than a couple feet. Let's say maybe five or 6 feet.
6 feet, okay.
Yeah, and that way, and wherever you're planning to plant it, when you start digging down, if you run into mimosa, the reason why I'm saying is because this is a mimosa, so their root systems are pretty gentle and friendly. But, you know, if you dig down and you hit a big root of the mimosa, then move over a little bit.
Okay.
And what was your other question?
Oh, the water grass.
Oh, then you're going to have to. Yeah, basically it's starting to get, it's really ferocious right now. I've seen some of it in some yards like 6 or 8 inches high. And, it's, I mean, they just mowed their grass a few days ago. But anyway, you have to get a sedge killer. So you have to go to your favorite garden center and tell them you have nut grass or sedge. And then they'll give you a specific herbicide for killing that.
Okay, sure.
That's about the only way to get rid of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
And now let's go to Murfreesboro, Illinois, and that's where Gene lives. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
You and the Cardinals are the number one shows on KMOX. There's no question about it. That's the truth. Two items. My forsythia this spring is 3 years old, bloomed beautifully. We just sat and watched it for a couple of weeks. Amazing. Then the spring... Summer, it's growing fine. And about 2 weeks ago, I looked over at it, and every leaf was drooping like it hadn't had any water in a year. I took some water out, watered it, didn't help it. Now it's dead.
Ooh.
You have any idea what killed it just all of a sudden like that?
Maybe too much water. Because if it's drooping and it's a relatively young plant, the droopingness can, in the heat of the day, it's a protective type thing. So maybe it had adequate water, and you adding more water, because forsythia do not like water, abundance of water, that's probably what, you know, sort of, and it may not be dead. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, yank it up and throw it away. I'd say just kind of keep your fingers crossed and see what happens next spring.
Okay. Well, I was just absolutely devastated, because, I mean, it was stunningly beautiful.
Right. But, again, wilting foliage in the heat of the day does not necessarily mean that water should be added to the plant.
Okay. Next item. When do you do your last pinching of chrysanthemums?
Basically, you've already done one in June, one in July.
I've done three.
Okay. So that should be, I would maybe do one more if you wanted to. That's going to make it so they're going to bloom a little bit later. But no more,
I like that.
None after August whatsoever.
Okay. Okay. Thank you much.
Certainly.
Number
my pleasure.
Camel X.
And Marie, could you do it kind of quick?
Hello?
Hello, Marie, could you do it quickly?
Yes. I have a crepe myrtle, and it is beautiful. And as beautiful as it is, it's gotten so wide, it's blocking a couple of areas that I don't want blocked. So if I cut that back in the fall, will that risk it blooming in the areas that are cut back?
No, not at all. I mean, the areas that are cut back, you know, you're not going to get any blooms because you cut off the stems. But that's not a problem. Fall is a good time. Fall all the way up until early spring before the new growth, you know, the new foliage growth starts growing. Yeah, that's when you can prune the crepe myrtles. So there's no problem doing that.
But it will bloom again in the areas that are cut back?
Only if there's... Depends upon the size of the stems that are left. So, if you cut it back all the way to the ground, you're not going to get any blooms in those areas.
Oh, no, no. I'm just wanting on each side of it to take off about 3 feet.
Oh, yeah. You should get blooms off those.
Because it's like 15 foot wide.
Whoa.
You know?
That's very nice.
Oh, it's beautiful. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure. And I guess we're going to have to wait to take the other calls until after the news. Other things related to watermelons. In Japan, a technique for growing square watermelons has been perfected. There are square watermelons for sale between $75 and $100 U.S. dollars each. Who cares about a square watermelon that you're going to pay $75 to $100 for? Crazy stuff. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, which I'll be giving shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And, Mr. Kelly, before you take off.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about different melons and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and you've grown them.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And the watermelon, I could never figure out exactly when to pick them. I was told, you know, listen for the hollow. I can't tell the hollow. when the stem dries up, pick it. That didn't really always right. work. And so the watermelons were hit and miss. The cantaloupe were amazing. And the way I would know to pick them, when the ants start eating them, that's when you know they're good. Then they're ripe right off the vine. Let's eat them right now. Get the ants off it.
Oh.
You know, unless you want the added protein.
You're right.
But, yeah, when the ants would eat them, that's when you knew they were really good.
And so next year you're going to go back and start growing some more melons?
Probably. I'm thinking about it. This year we did all flowers, and I worked on that garden, and we expanded it, like I've said before.
Right.
But I may go back next year and go back to some melons and things like beets and things like that, yeah.
Beets?
Beets.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I like beets myself.
We had some last night, Sumi. They were awesome.
Really?
They're so good, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
But here's another little bit of watermelon trivia.
Yeah?
There is over 1,200 varieties of watermelons in the world.
Really?
1,200 varieties? I mean, I had no idea that was the situation.
They're really splitting hairs to find those, though, I think.
I mean, have you ever had a yellow watermelon?
I don't think so.
Yeah, yellow fruit.
Yeah.
Not very flavorful.
No.
Not to me. Not to my taste buds. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. I'll let you go back to work. So anyway.
Sweet. Thank you.
Like the watermelon and the cantaloupe. Exactly. And folks, here's some other things, though, related to watermelons. China is the first in worldwide watermelon production. And the United States only ranks 7th. So that's kind of amazing. I thought we'd be at the top, but China's way ahead of us. And there's 6 other countries between China and us. In the United States, there's more than $500 million worth of watermelon commercially grown every year, with Georgia growing the most, and Missouri ranks number 7th in production. So just amazing. You can't possibly believe all these different things about watermelon. Oh, by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We're here to discuss plant selections, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds for annuals, your bulbs. Speaking of bulbs, my elephant ears, I've got them in pots, and some of the pots are in, let's say, on the west side of the house, and they were the elephant ears were really bent down, you know, in the heat of the day yesterday, and even into the evening, I thought, uh-oh, they're really dry, but this morning, they're back up and perked, so that's why, you know, that's a good example of wait until the morning to take a look at, regardless of what kind of plant it is. If it's wilted in the morning, then it definitely needs water. If it's wilted in the evening or during the heat of the day, it doesn't necessarily mean it needs water. It's just conserving water. And I'm not just talking about bulbs. I'm talking about any kind of plant. And how about your edibles, your ground covers, your house plants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens? I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but it's offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing. He answers the phone. He just needs your first name and where you're calling from. During the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk, where I come to your home and we can talk about aesthetic problems or problem solving or whatever it happens to be. Today, after the show, I'm headed out to Baldwin. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. And we can schedule a time where I'll come and do a walk and talk in your yard. I'll share 40-plus years of experience. Oh, 40 years. But it's been fun 40 years. So whether it's plant care up and down and all around. Tip of the trial goes is a special recognition for individual or group or a situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. A tip of the trial just goes out to all the people who have continued to work, even now that the weather is, you know, entirely changed and it's brutally hot out there. But, I mean, some of the landscapes, as I walk through the neighborhood or I drive out to my walk and talk location, I mean, some are just really striking. So a tip of the trial goes out to all the individuals that are really into the outdoors and are working against, you know, or some really kind of adverse conditions like today. Brian was talking about what the humid temp is going to be. And it's a little bit rough and brutal, but thanks, because it makes the, whether it's walking or driving, a lot more enjoyable because you've taken that time and effort. So a tip of the trial goes out to you. And should we take a couple calls? Okay, let's get a call. Let's go to Flo. Hi, Flo.
Hi. Oh. It is Floy. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
My daughter gave me a beautiful hibiscus for Mother's Day, and I have it in a pot. I've gotten some beautiful sort of peachy orange blooms, but a lot of the buds just fall off. There's a line about half an inch from the bud. It's a crease. And can you help me with that? Why they break off there? A lot of them do.
Basically, it's just it's not vigorous and healthy. So, I mean, we're talking about a tropical houseplant type, correct?
Yeah, but I've got it outside.
Yeah, that's fine. It's just that it just doesn't have the energy to support. Flowering really stresses plants out a huge amount.
Okay.
So it just doesn't have the energy to support all those flowers. Even though it can set the flower buds and start the process, it just doesn't have the energy to push them completely open.
What about watering? Does it matter?
Don't overwater, but definitely you want to fertilize because they got to have those nutrients. So just
okay.
Probably every 3 or 4 weeks or every 2 to 3 weeks even to with fertilizing. And I'm assuming you got drainage, holes in the bottom
right,
of the pot. So,
right, yeah.
So you're doing everything you possibly can. They don't want to go, get to a dry circumstance. So just watch the inside of the pot. When the potting mix starts shrinking away a little bit and you see a slight gap there, then you can water.
Okay, and just enjoy the blooms I get, I guess.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. Just gorgeous. Bye-bye.
Great. Well, thanks. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, I had a listener call, I think it was last week, and he was concerned about, he has some white oak trees or a white oak tree, and he couldn't tell from looking at the tree whether his tree had oak wilt or anthracnose. So basically, the best way to do that is to take a look at just the overall health of the tree. And with oaks and a lot of the other trees that had the anthracnose here early in the spring because of all the high amount of water that we had, they recovered from that pretty good. But if with the oak tree, once you get the oak wilt, it's not really a good circumstance whatsoever. And they get it, and recovery, both of them are funguses, and both of them cause leaf problems. But you can take a look at the leaves and how the leaves are discoloring. That can tell you if you have, let's say, an oak wilt versus an anthracnose circumstance. And the best thing to do is have a tree service come out, tree line. Can't beat them. But anyway, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Gloria's yard. Hi, Gloria.
How you doing this morning?
Good.
Well, I was asking you about two things. The first one is these knockout roses. They're not blooming at all. I bought me a couple more, and they had a couple on them. They ain't doing nothing. Do I need I bought some knockout rose fertilizer, and I thought maybe if I put those in there, it'd be better.
Definitely roses need to be fed routinely, basically from the very time that the foliage really starts coming out in the springtime. I mean, a little bit after that, but they are plants that need a lot of consistent food.
Okay, but I just bought these two because I had a couple of them that I just bought these two.
Okay.
Okay, so you think I should put the knockout rose fertilizer? What fertilizer you think I should use?
Yeah, it's use one that's specifically for roses.
Okay.
Because it's going to have some of the micronutrients that other ones don't necessarily have because it prevents some of the problems that potentially roses could get.
Okay, about these hydrangeas, I don't understand. They're in the shade, why they're just dying. I'm thinking that maybe they're getting too much sun where I got them. What can you know about the hydrangeas? What do I need to put in the hydrangeas?
So are you talking about hydrangeas?
Yes.
And what?
I just bought me some oak hydrangeas.
So they like shade, but they like an acidic soil too. So get a fertilizer for them. Now, if they've only been in the ground for a couple weeks, don't fertilize them yet. Wait until, you know, maybe not even this year at all. But just let them, you know, keep them moist. Don't let them get too wet. Definitely don't let them go through a drought circumstance. But and hopefully you didn't plant them too close to trees that are creating a shade.
Don't plant them too close to the tree.
Right, because the root systems are too thick, and it's too, you know, I mean, it's too aggressive for, you know, anything to get established in that kind of situation.
So I got a tree that's real tall. Can I plant them at the bottom since there is sun going, you know?
Yeah, they can handle the sun. It's just too close to the trunk. It's like solid wood right there. That's what you have to worry about. So if you start digging down and you start hitting tree roots, then, you know.
But no, I don't put them that close. I brought it out 3 feet and then I'm planting them.
Okay. So if, again, just where you're digging, make sure there's not a whole lot of root right there.
Okay. Thank you for your good, Mike. You're doing a good job.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Gloria.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And now let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Mike. Hey, I'm looking for a Rosa Sharon tree, something that I can plant in the ground that will only get about 4 to 6 foot high and will handle Missouri's winters. Any idea?
Well, basically, Rosa Sharon trees are just Rosa Sharons that have been pruned in the production nursery to have a single trunk versus a whole bunch of stems coming up out of the ground. And as far as keeping it, finding one that's going to stay that height, I don't know of any. I don't know of a hybrid of the Rosa Sharon that's going to stay that low.
What about is there maybe a specific type of Rosa Sharon bush that would not, because I've seen some Rosa Sharons that are 8, 10, 12 feet tall, and I don't want one that tall.
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, you can prune to control the height. But for the most part, I don't think there is a dwarf Rosa Sharon.
Okay.
Of any kind, whether it's tree form or shrub form or anything else.
So both the trees and the shrubs will live in Missouri and survive the winter?
Oh, yeah. They're tough.
Okay. Okie dokie. Thank you.
Yeah, anything that blooms, in the summertime, you got all the way, you know, from the time they finish flowering until the leaves start falling off, all the way until the new growth begins in the springtime, which would just be leaves, to do the pruning to control the height.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Beth's yard, and she lives in Canton. Hi, Canton.
Good morning, Mike. And thank you. I have a question about a burning bush that's about 15 years old, and we never know when to trim it, but it never really turns red in the fall. And just wondering what is the best way to trim, when, and it is overgrown?
Basically, you're growing them for those 2 weeks in the fall of the red color. So is it in the full sun?
Yes, pretty much.
Full sun all day long, every day. So if it is not really giving you the red color, then that particular one is just not a good variety. I don't want to say variety. It's not a good plant for good fall color. Because some of them just don't, you know, produce, like, you see the pictures in the catalog, you see the pictures on the tag and everything else, but they're not, you know, they just don't do it. So the parent that particular one that you have, that, you know, let's say the twigs were cut off to make the new plants.
It
wasn't a good plant. So
I see.
That's why it's not giving you the good color.
Okay. When should we trim it?
it doesn't really matter. You don't want to prune in the heat of the summertime, but okay, you're growing them for fall color. So anytime, you know, let's say after, let's say Halloween all the way up until probably maybe the 1st of March or so, you can prune it anytime during that time.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We so appreciate being able to hear you on the Garden Hotline up here in Northeast Missouri.
Well, great.
Thanks again.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your show. Now let's head over to Dick's yard. Hi, Dick.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I have a marigold problem. When I first put them in, they bloomed gorgeously. There was some rumors and some deer in the neighborhood.
Uh-oh.
Something bit them off, and it was like they spit them out. Since that time, I have not seen one flower.
How does the foliage look?
It looks fine.
Yeah. So what it is marigolds, you know, for them to, readjust, but to make, you know, new flower buds after they've been chopped off like that, it's going to take a long, involved process. Are you fertilizing them?
Yes.
Okay, so you're fertilizing them. The foliage looks good. So it's just going to be a matter of time. There's nothing you can do other than the fact that marigolds are slow to set the next set of flower buds.
Do you think it'll happen this year?
It's hard to say, because how long has it been since you've had ate the flowers off of them?
Oh, it's been maybe 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, and you're not seeing any bud formation or anything.
No,
yeah,
it's the first time I've ever had this happen.
Yeah, so, you know, I would say you may get some, like, in the fall, like when the mums are blooming, but I wouldn't, you know, anticipate any flowers before that, because if you're not seeing any sort of formation of the buds, you know, flower buds at all, I would, you know, it's just going to be a roll of dice, let's put it that way.
Okay, so you don't have a magic formula.
If I did, I'd be a millionaire and I'd be living on the moon.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck getting back home.
Right, thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Sure. Yeah, also maybe head out to your favorite garden center and get, you know, if they have marigolds there, just go ahead and get some more and plant them around the existing ones that you have, and that way you're going to have some flowers there right now. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go to North County into Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for your program. I dug out a patch of standard iris, divided them, replanted them. When can I put down preen to keep up or to keep garbage from coming up around them?
Preen, basically what that does is suppress or kill seeds that are germinating. So you don't necessarily want, I wouldn't probably put it down right now in the heat of the summertime, but I would probably maybe next year put it down when the forsythia is in bloom, and then again, you know, probably, let's say, I don't know, let me ask, the area that you put them in, is it a really weedy area, or was it pretty clean as far as the garden space goes?
It had been really weedy.
Oh.
And then I got in there and pulled them all out.
Okay, but you probably got some seeds there, so I would go ahead and put some preen down in mid to late August, and then next year when the yellow forsythia is in bloom.
Okay, thank you very much, and I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you. Yeah, sorry for my sort of hesitation there, but I was a little bit worried about them, but, you know, as far as how what the garden space was. But if you have a history of weeds in that spot, then definitely put, you know, down to mid to late August, because that's going to get rid of the cool season weeds like henbit and things along that line. So thanks, Rich. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Back to watermelon trivia. The world record for watermelon seed spitting is an astounding 75 feet 2 inches, and it was set in 1995 in Georgetown, Texas. Now, we, you know, as kids, I don't as an adult, maybe I should, just for fun. We would spit watermelon seeds, and I don't know if we could ever get them over 6 or 7 feet. So what was that, 75 feet? Oh, my gosh. That seems impossible. Anyway, back to the phones. Let's go to Joe's yard, and it's in South County. Hi, Joe.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In your opening dialogue this morning, I thought you mentioned you were going to be talking about pollinating cucumbers. I've got cucumber vines with a lot of blooms, and I don't see any pollinators around. So I'm looking for some help on how do you find a male flower for pollinating.
Well, basically, the flowers are going to be there. So just look at the flowers and, run your finger just gently around one of them. And if you get pollen on your finger, then that's going to be the male. The female won't have any pollen.
Okay.
So that's all you have to do is check that. But, cucumbers, like anybody in that cucumber family, has both male and female flowers both. And it's still a little bit early, for cucumber production, although there are plenty of them that have had, I've been to places or houses that have had the cucumbers growing, already pollinated. It's just a matter of time more so than anything else.
Well, I haven't been able to get any to grow the last 3 years. They bloom and never get any pollination on them.
Maybe you should take like a Q-tip, and get some of the pollen on the Q-tip and then take it over to the female flower and then, put the pollen on the female flower, on the stigma.
Okay, because I'm desperately in need. I'm going to make some bread and butter pickles.
Oh, wow.
Okay, thank you so much. I'll get the Q-tips out and see what I can do.
Yeah, and just, get a little bit on it and just dab it on the tip of the female flower. So you're going to know which is which. Just fool around a little bit till you make sure that which ones have the pollen. But the pollen's pretty obvious.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. And that, again, will be the male. And now let's go to Bill's yard in O'Fallon. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, good program as always. Just a couple quick questions. My wife has asked, and so she's listening too, when can we trim back the irises? When can we cut the foliage of the iris back?
I would probably wait for another a week or so. But after that, unless they're starting to turn yellow, once they start to turn yellow, then you can cut them back at that time.
Okay, second question. I'm looking for things to plant the last half of the growing season. Now, I did put out some Romano Aroma bush beans. And they're only 55 days, and I've had them before, and I like them, so I thought I'd try them again. But do you have any suggestions on what other kind of things can, in our climate around here, be profitable to plant as a second planting?
Profitable as far as just eating and things like that?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, always, yeah.
Any kind of the lettuce family, all that whole group, those type things, a lot of the herbs can be planted. So that's probably what I'd take a look at. To grow from seed.
All right, just last comment. Only in Texas could somebody spit a seed 75 feet. I don't know, the guy was standing on a 3-story building for what when he did that.
That seems impossible. So
it does.
I don't, Georgetown, Texas, I don't have any idea where that is. Maybe those people are, who knows, got big lips.
Okay, you have a good day.
Yep. And now let's go to Dee's yard. Hi, Dee.
Hello. How are you, Mike?
Good.
I have a question. I had a yucca bush in a pot, and I noticed early on the spring that it looked like it was dying, and I kept clipping off the dead leaves. And now I have about 10 or 12 little ones that are about 6 inches tall.
Right.
Can I replant them now, or do I need to wait? Or they're very crowded in this particular pot that I had it in.
I would just leave them alone until the weather cools down, because basically you're going to divide those young ones off the stem of the mother plant, and so consequently, to do it in the heat, even though they're very drought tolerant and everything else. I would say, just to the advantage of the plant, I'd wait until mid to late August if I was going to do it, or into September.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, yuccas, that's what exactly happens. They'll basically drop the lower or kill off the lower leaves, and then the sucker growth of new plants will come off the stem of the mother. Let's go now over to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Yes, Mike. Since you were talking about watermelons, I was wondering if you were familiar with the black diamond watermelon.
I've seen it, you know.
Yeah, they're seedless, and they're round like a bowling ball and larger than a bowling ball and really a dark green, almost a black. And they have a sweeter taste, and they're more meaty than the conventional watermelon, and they have a good taste. But they're a little more expensive than a regular watermelon, but I know Deerberg's handles it. I'm not sure about the other grocery stores, but I'm not that fond of watermelon particularly, but that one seems to have a real good taste to it.
Well, good. I'll take a look, you know, and we'll give it a try. Because, okay, I mean, I like them. They're okay, but sometimes they're just kind of just watery, and they don't have a whole lot of taste. So I'll give – this is called Black Diamond.
Exactly, and this one is – it's more meaty, like I said, and they're not so watery.
Good. Sounds perfect.
At least the ones I had tried.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the insight. And that's going to Liz's yard, and she lives in South City.
Hi, Mike.
Liz.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really enjoy your show. What I was calling about is I have a little bit of a raised garden. I have cucumbers, tomatoes, sweet peppers, and green peppers. But what I also had planted in the past, and it draws the bees in. I put it right by my garden, right next to it. It's a catnip. It grows, it'll grow and grow and come back every year.
Right.
But the bees love it, and then they're right there. They go right over to the cucumbers and stuff, too.
That's perfect.
I just kind of wanted to throw that out because someone gave me a cutting, and it's really spreads.
Right. And they kind of – doesn't this have kind of a grayish foliage, gray-green foliage?
It's green, but then it gets some little flowers on the top.
Right, which
like
are bluish.
Bluish, dark purple, something like that.
Right.
And then, but I'm telling you, I have bees galore, and they don't bother you. You know, the bees, they're busy trying to get what they got to get, but then they're right by my cucumbers and everything.
That's perfect.
So it helps a lot. So I just want to throw that out.
Well, great. Well, thanks.
Okay, enjoy your show.
Yeah, those kind of little tips, it can make a big difference. As long as people know that these are spreaders, they're perennials, but attracting the bees, that's, I mean, exactly what you want to have happen. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we got a couple lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Kevin's yard. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have got a problem with the water grass or nut grass,
mm-hmm.
and that's every year I've been spraying it just with a hand sprayer trying to pull it by hand, and I just can't seem to get rid of it. I didn't know if there's a better way to do something before it comes up, or if you have any ideas.
No, there's really not. I mean, the best thing to do is watch it, and as soon as it comes up, spray it at that time. If you wait till later on in the season, they get a cuticle, kind of a waxy surface that prevents the herbicide from being absorbed into it. So just watch it closely early on and go after it as soon as you start seeing it.
Does pulling it, does it just come right back, or do you know? Or
well, the problem with pulling it is if it's a mature piece, a clump, you know, the triangular stem, when you pull it, you'll see the white roots. But if it's an older one, it could have, at the end of each root, a seed. So consequently, you pull out this plant, but it could have released 4, 5, or 6 seeds into that spot where you pulled it out of.
Yeah. It's frustrating because it just doesn't seem like a way to get rid of it.
So yeah,
I've been trying for.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough, it's kind of like violets. It's a really tough weed to get rid of. But using, an herbicide specifically for killing, the nut grass, nut sedge, whatever you want to call it, That's the only way to go, and early as possible.
Right. Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Sure. And now let's see, where should we go? Let's go over to Joe's yard. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently did some regrading in my backyard with the anticipation of getting some St. Louis compost for about 2 inches and then some sod on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, my regrade left me with nothing but a hard-packed clay and rock surface that I have right now. And I'm just wondering, is there something I can put on there before I bring in the topsoil or sod to soften that up or to make it more amenable?
Well, you're going to have to get the compost or topsoil compost mix from St. Louis Compost and mix it, blend it with the existing soil. You can't just have that your existing soil and then layer some St. Louis composting stuff on top of it and then grow sod on that. That's not how you got to do it. You have to mix it and blend it in with the existing soil.
And the existing soil being clay and rock.
Exactly. Right.
That's a tough challenge. Okay.
Yes, so very much.
Okay, and there's no chemical or any kind of neutralizing, nothing that'll soften the clay, is there?
No.
Other than a shovel or a pick.
Right, so physically, that's the only way to break it up, and then not just physically, because if you just, let's say, churn the existing soil without adding something to it, it's just going to melt back down to be the same stuff.
Gotcha. And about how much topsoil altogether do I need for a healthy lawn that doesn't need water all the time?
Are you talking cool season lawns?
Yes.
So, really, probably, let's say, 2 to 3 inches blended in with the existing soil. And then not only that, that's just to get the sod laid down or whatever to get it going. But then in the future, core aeration with a top dressing of, compost, on an every other year basis. So it's not just one process is going to make it so everything's going to go good for a long period of time. That's not how it works here.
Gotcha. And the other thing is I was going to use the 70-30 because I am trying to get some soil base rather than the 50-50 composition from compost. What did you think of that?
That's probably okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and I love your show.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Waterloo and into Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Mike. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I had a problem with dogwoods. I'm trying to get a dogwood tree to grow, and when I bought it, the label on it said at least 6 hours of sunlight per day. So I've got it in a spot where it's getting 8 to 10 hours, but it's not thriving at all, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
It doesn't necessarily need 6 hours of sun. I don't know why that would say that on the tag. But if it's you planted it this year, correct?
Correct. It's been in the ground maybe 2 months.
This has just been a very, very difficult because 2 months ago is when we were still having all the rains and everything else. And now we're having extreme rains and then, dry extended periods. So hopefully you planted it or you dug the hole 3 times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% as deep. So in other words, the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground. And it's just going to be a slow, long, involved process.
Okay. Is there anything I can do as far as fertilizing it at this point?
No, not when it's been recently planted like that. Fertilizer could actually do more damage than good.
Okay. All right, then. Well, thank you very much. And how do I get a hold of you to come out and take a look at a parcel of my yard?
Just go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Mike.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go to Greg's yard. Hi, Greg.
Hi. How you doing, Mike?
Good.
I just have a question about a Japanese maple. We planted this about 10 years ago, and initially it was the typical dark reddish colored leaves. And for the last probably like 6 years, only part of the tree is that color, and the rest of it that has grown up is just green in the leaf color.
Maybe soil pH. So your soil may be a little bit alkaline, and that may be part of the problem. Also, it may be just not a very good cutting, and the cutting, just wasn't tough and durable enough. So did it have a specific variety name to it, like Blood Good or something along that line?
Honestly, I don't have a clue.
Okay. So it may be the soil pH, but there may not be anything that's going to make that much difference.
Okay, so try some either having a soil test done or just add some sort of an acidic additive gradually and see if it makes any difference.
Right,
over the
exactly.
Years.
So that would be something like iron sulfate.
Okay. All right. Can't hurt. It's mainly just a planting bed, so I'll just kind of do that in the area of these Japanese maples gradually and then just see if it, you know, shows any improvement over the years.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you can really do.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. Now, Carol, could you do it really, really quickly?
Yes. I have a 3-year-old raspberry bushes that they only set small berries. And then they don't do anything. What am I doing wrong?
They're just young. So it may take a couple more years for them to get mature enough to be able to produce full-size raspberries.
Oh, my goodness. Now, should I be cutting the canes back because they're so healthy growing all over the place? Or when do I trim them back?
Basically, what you do is at 3 years, just go out there and cut out the largest in diameter at ground level. Cut out those canes, you know, just a few every year.
Okay. All right. Should I be fertilizing them at all?
Absolutely. Fertilizing and, you know, do a top dressing, too, with like a, okay. you know, a compost type thing.
All right. I will. Thank
right.
you.
Yep. My pleasure. That's going to be the last call of the day. So one thing, all these lightning strikes, that lightning storm last Tuesday, we had some lightning strikes over our house. I mean, literally, I don't usually jump when there's lightning strikes, but one of these was so loud. But guess what? Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline. See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.